setting people up with the tool set to be able to lead remotely, i.e. the technology, the Zoom, the Office 365, the Skype Business, all the technology tools. But my question is, are we enabling people with the mindset and skill set? Leading remotely is different. So the essence of this webinar is about enabling you with the skills, mindset, skill set to complement the tool sets to be able to lead effectively and help your people to hit the ground running in the remote environment that they're working within. And I think empowerment is an overused word in the marketplace. The number of times I've heard leaders and managers say to me, Royston, we've empowered them, but they're just not doing it. And my challenge back is always, but have you enabled them? Because an empowerment without enablement is a train crash, which is why I think the whole focus on mindset, skill set in parallel and unison with the technology tools that we have for remote working are so important. Hence why this whole webinar, Leading Remotely, is so timely in terms of what we're talking about today. So there's going to be five principles that we're going to talk about. The first is about purposeful leadership. And the whole session could be just dedicated to that first principle. However, what I want to draw out for you there is what I see is five of the key traits that need to be prevalent coming to the fore in our leadership brands in order to lead better than ever. And I think the current challenges that we're in the landscape, organizations will be judged by the quality of the leadership and how people lead through the headwinds and the challenges that we are facing. It's time for leadership to really show up. It's about turning off the autopilot. It's about being conscious and deliberate as the architects of our own destiny about how we lead people better than ever. So that's what we'll be talking about in purposeful leadership. We'll be talking about routines and rituals and how it isn't just a 9-till-5 day when you're in the home office remote working environment. And I'll be sharing with you five key principles. And when we do routines and rituals, I think it's important to wear two hats. One, leading self, how well we're doing in creating our own routines and rituals. And then number two, how we are coaching and setting our people up for success with the routines and rituals that they're creating so that they can hit the ground running. In my mind, we don't have time for people to spend 4 to 6 weeks finding their feet about how they work in the remote environment. Our job as leaders is to coach, mentor, and facilitate the conversations and the discussions so that our people are really set up for success. The third that we're going to be talking about is our over-communication plan. A communication plan in itself is not enough. It's about repetition of message. It's about clarity of communication. It's about the media that we're using and how we are designing our over-communication plan in the challenging landscape that we're operating within, particularly in a remote environment. You cannot communicate enough, hence the over-communication plan. The fourth we'll be looking at is productivity and results. Yes, we've got to be empathic and we've got to really get connected with our people, but the reality is, in order to benefit from the rebound, we've got to be around. And therefore, we still have to drive performance and deliver productivity and results. So I want to share some nuances with you, the five key principles that I think are different when you think about leading remotely versus when you are in the same building or you are closer to your people. And then finally, it's really important that we are rounded leaders as purposeful leaders, that we are genuinely interested, that we are caring, that we are empathic about our people's broader well-being. And that's what we'll be covering in principle five. So let's hit the ground running with each of these. There is a checklist that we've created for as part of your toolkit that we will send you. That will give you the opportunity to score against each of these five principles, the five ideas within each about how the frequency of how well you're applying some of these principles against always, sometimes, never. So you'll have that checklist. The recording is going to be sent to you immediately following this session. So let's move straight into our first principle about purposeful leadership. People are silently begging to be led. This is not about managing or micromanaging performance. It's about leading people through the challenging. The way the boss comes in the morning, the way that we engage with our people will be in direct correlation to how our people follow. And for me, the ultimate accolade of leadership is when people are following you because they want to, not because they have to. Because you are setting the cadence and rhythm for the organization, you are leading by example, and people naturally gravitate and have you as their role model. So people are silently begging to be led, not managed. Leadership is so important, and how we show up is critical. So when we think about how we show up, there are five principles that we're going to talk about. Before I get into those, I just want to take a moment to take a step back and press the pause button. Part of your toolkit is going to be one of the chapters that I'm going to extract from Rise, my second book, which is chapter five, How We're Wired as Human Beings. For over 2 decades now, I've had a fascination with how people are wired, what makes them tick, why do people do what they do? And one of the areas that I talk about in chapter five, which you will get, is this whole mindset and psyche around the five interlocking human drivers. And the challenge in reality is that in times of challenge like that we're in, there is a default mode. Human psychology defaults us towards certainty. You know, the questions that people are asking at the moment is, am I going to have a job? Am I going to be able to pay the mortgage? Am I going to be able to put food on the table? How long are we going to be in this scenario about remote working for, in lockdown for? So people naturally gravitate and default to certainty. And I've always had a natural default to the second of the human drivers, the adventure, the uncertainty. That's what's always driven me. And I know from a personal perspective, even for me, you know, there's a absolute gravitation towards that certainty at the moment. Are my family safe? Are the kids safe? Is the house secure? Is that our castle at the moment? So I think it's about as leaders, as purposeful leaders, how we are turning up our dial in terms of our empathy. That whilst as leaders, our default mode might be to adventure, to uncertainty, to navigating through, it's about looking at what the lens of our people is currently saying and being empathic and empathetic about understanding the uncertainties and their natural default for certainty. So with that as the backdrop, let's talk about these first five principles that we're going to talk about. And the first is about being visible. And you might be thinking, Royston, that's an interesting one to have in a remote working environment about being visible. Now, I can understand that if it was in the office environments where you are with your team every single day, that you are engaging with them in the face-to-face environment. But actually, for me, in the remote environment, being visible is even more important. And that is just about thinking differently. It's about our frequency of engagement that we have with our teams. It's about not hiding behind technology, the phone and email. The great thing about the technological advancements today is with Zoom, with Office 365, and with Teams, with Skype Business, whatever media we're using, the video conference, the ability to connect and look in the whites of the eyes of our people face to face is as strong as ever as it can be, as if we were in the same building. And the one thing that's certain is that if you think about the challenging times we're in, it is going to make us think differently about how we do business beyond coronavirus 19. 2020 business reset is ultimately, this will not be a reboot in terms of going back to where we were before. There are going to be new ways of working, different ways that we engage our people, we engage our clients. And I think this is the opportunity to start to really embed some of those behaviors now. So being visible is about how you are engaging with your people, that you're leveraging your technology, that you are using face-to-face technology and the video technology so that you can really connect at a visible level. The second principle about being a swan, are you calmness personified? And where do you take your counsel? So with your peer colleagues in the close confines of your own home office, you can rant, you can scream, you can express your challenges and the uncertainties that we're facing. But when it comes to leading our people, we've got to be calmness personified. And the metaphor I use is it's like the swan, that under the water, your feet might be paddling like hell, but above the surface, you are calm, you are collected. Your people will be a reflection of you as the leader, and therefore, how you lead in these challenging, turbulent times is absolutely critical and fundamental. And I think of leadership as well, like the egg timer, particularly when you think about senior or middle management. and the egg timer, you've got all the messages that are cascading down from above, and you've got your people who want leading. So you're being bombarded from both facets, from both angles, the top and the bottom. And our job as leaders is to absorb. It's like the absorption mat that sits underneath the washing machine. How do we absorb all the messages, and how do we communicate with our people in a really calm, considered, clarity, purposeful way where we are calmness personified? So where are you as we go through each of these principles? I just want you to almost imagine as we talk about each of these that you are scoring yourself about where you are against each. The third is about being the pragmatic optimist. And pragmatism, and this is the yin and the yang in our leadership DNA, that we are pragmatic, that we are grounded in reality, that we're not delusional about the headwinds and the challenges that we're facing off into. That as leaders, and part of our own personal and organizational resilience, is confront the brutal facts and face up to the headwinds with our core of steel and locked in. However, alongside that, it is about being the optimist. It is about the glasses not half empty. It is about half full. It is about being future focused, that we will navigate ourselves through these landscapes. And it's really interesting because, you know, if I think about over the last couple of weeks, I've literally been 12, 14 hours a day on video conference, on calls with business continuity plans with so many different industries. One minute I'm with Harrods talking about their business continuity plan. Then I'm working with the estate agency market and the guild. You know, and there's certain industries like the estate agency market where the government have just closed down property sales, where the markets are just wiped out overnight. There's other industries where actually there's people at home and they're really starting to think about their financial affairs. They're really starting to think about their trust and their funds, and they're actually got the time to stop and think about that. So it's really interesting across different industries about how some are just being decimated, whereas others, there is a real opportunity to engage, to wind up the dials of our engagement with our people and our clients even more than ever. So that for me is the bit about the optimism, where we will navigate ourselves through this. And if we're positive, if we're upbeat, but grounded in reality as leaders, then that will permeate through our people and they will share in that pragmatic optimism. The third principle is about being empathic, which goes back to really the out-of-body experience, where you start to look at the lens through your people's eyes about what they are experiencing, that we do understand what motivates them, how they're ticking, that they will have days where they are the optimist, but they will have days where they're fearful, where they're feeling overwhelmed. And I think in being empathic, it's really important to listen to the language that your people are talking. You know, I hear a lot at the moment about fear, overwhelm, denial. It's a surreal environment that we're operating within. You know, I see emails from team members where they're talking about being burned out. We've got to tune into that language so that we can have the requisite conversations in being empathic, helping our people to navigate through it. And also understanding that their broader well-being is really important. So in a world where we are more connected through technology, when I think about being empathic, my question for you is, you might be more connected through technology, but are you really connecting? Are you really connecting with your people? And do they see that you are, yes, driving the performance and productivity, but you're doing it through an empathic lens of understanding the challenges and what the world looks like through their lens? And then finally, the fifth key trait that I think is really important in our leadership DNAs from a leading remotely perspective is we need to be empathic. And the yin and the yang comes into play here. But the yang is we need to be commercial. We've still got to drive productivity. We've still got to deliver results in a remote environment. And how do we do that? How do we set our people up for success? But how do we really drive that productivity and the results? In order to benefit from the rebound, which will undoubtedly come, we've got to be around. And that's about making sure that we're taking care of business today in order to be able to make sure that we are strong and we can do more of a V as we come out of this crisis, and we're not doing more of the U or an L. So that's our five principles that sit within purposeful leadership. I just really want you to think about, and when you see the checklist at the end of the session, I want you to almost score yourself on a scale of 1 out of 10 for how well you think you are doing in each of these areas. What we're talking about on this WebEx, there's no rocket science to this. But I just really want you, and actually we did an in-house webinar last week for a client who ran the similar webinar to what we're doing today, leading remotely. And actually what they did was, I was speaking to one of the directors afterwards, and she said, Royston, you know, what you talked about was just common sense. And she said, what was great is that probably 50% of it fell in the camp of, we're already doing it. And it was great to get the positive affirmation and reinforcement of what we're already doing. So as we go through this webinar, I almost want you to think about RAG rating where you are against the three buckets. So what are the greens and what are the things that I talk about that you go tick in the box, Royston, I'm already doing those. Great, positive affirmation and reinforcement of what we're doing keeps our core strong as leaders. What are the ambers? What are the things that perhaps I talk about and you go, I'm doing that, but it's intermittent. I could turn up the dial and do more of that. So they're your quick wins in terms of your ambers. And what might be some of the things that I talk or I focus and hone in on that you think, actually, that makes perfect sense, particularly in the remote environment area that I could be putting greater focus on. So I really want you to think about it in those three buckets of your RAG rating, the greens, the ambers, and the reds. And that will allow you to, A, keep your core strong, focus on the quick wins in terms of your ambers, and maybe there might be some things I talk about that you just go, I need to really start to implement and bring those into how I am leading currently. So that's our purposeful leadership. The second bit that we're going to talk about is our routines and rituals. And when we think about leadership, I think purposeful leadership is a journey that follows three pathways. I lead self, I lead business, and I lead others. And in order to be a great leader of self, the starting point is not others and it's not the business. It's I lead self. When you fly on the planes, and of course, unfortunately, there's not many planes flying at the moment, but when you do and they're doing the safety demonstration and the oxygen mask drops down, what's the message that people give? And the safety crew, the first message is fit your own mask before you help anybody else. So in order to be effective as a leader and to be a purposeful leader, you've got to do the inner work of leadership. So particularly when I think about this next principle about routines and rituals, I almost want you to wear two hats when you think about this. I want you to wear your own hat for how well are you doing in terms of the routines and rituals that you've created. If you are predominantly working from home now, how are you setting yourself up for success? Have you hit the ground running? And then secondly, with your second hat, how are you coaching and facilitating the conversations with your people? So it doesn't take them 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks to find that cadence and rhythm in how they set themselves up for success, that you can facilitate those conversations and help them to really design their routines and rituals from day one. So what are the things to consider when we think about our routines and rituals? And I think the first most important point is it is not a normal day. People are not coming into the office at 8:30, 9 o'clock and going and checking out and going home at 5 o'clock. The challenge with the home working environment, particularly where we've got kids off school and if you are parents, and I've got a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, you know, particularly last week when they were off school, trying to do schooling, trying to do your full day's work. Jay, my wife, she works full time as well. So trying to keep all those plates up in the air, you cannot leave to chance. We've got to be conscious and deliberate as the architects of our own destiny about how we think about the routines and rituals and how we're going to set ourselves up for success. So I think in leading self and others, the first point is recognizing it's not a normal day. And I know for certain that Jane and I sat down and we took a template and we mapped out a typical day and went, right, what is our day going to look like? You know, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm working till 7:30. So I've done 2.5 hours work before the rest of the family gets up. Then we go into breakfast and try to keep the routines and rituals the same. So don't let the kids lie in, that we're still doing breakfast with them. They're still getting changed. We're still going through those routines and rituals that we would normally do if we were all going out the house at 8:30. That then I go back in the office and I'm working. I work through till 1 o'clock. Then I hand the baton over to Jane. Jane goes in the office and she's working from 1 till 4. And then I go back in the office at 4 o'clock and work through till 6, 6:30. So you can't leave that to chance. And it's about recognizing that the day is stretched in a remote environment. So we cannot judge and measure our people about whether we Zoom call them or we pick up the phone or call them or we send them an email and they don't answer immediately. And it's about, with our people, understanding how are they shaping their days. And if they're needing to spend time with the kids during the day and they've got both working parents in the same house, they might be doing a similar thing to what Jane and I are doing. They might be switching over. And it's about accepting that as leaders, that's fine. What we're measuring here is outputs, not inputs. And if people are working in the evenings or they're working early mornings, that's great. But it's about being cognizant of it and understanding that it's not a normal day for any of us in the working environment. The second key principle I think is really important in routines and rituals is that we understand your best time of day. And are you doing your most important work at your best time of day? And again, in our household, we are like opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm a morning person. Jane's a night owl. So Jane will work till, you know, 11:30, 12 o'clock. I think it was 12:15 last night. Whereas I just don't function from a professional perspective well in late in the evening. So I would rather get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And that is my best time of day. So I really hone in and do the most important things, whether that's proposals or whether it's writing content or designing webinars or thinking about what I'm going to be doing. I do my most important work at my best time of day. So from a productivity perspective and in routines and rituals, make sure that you are thinking about your optimum time and thinking about the optimum work that you need to do and making sure that you are creating alignment between those two. The third principle is your high performance day stroke week. Don't just leave that floating around in your head, whether it's in Outlook, whether it's on Google. There are lots of templates about broken down by the hour. Jane and I deliberately sat down and designed that high performance day and that high performance week about when we were breaking. And I don't know about you, but I, you know, even for me, who's used to remote working, last week, trying to find the groove was really difficult. And, you know, jumping out of work mode and going to do schooling with the kids from 1 till 4 and switching hats, it's difficult when you're having to switch your mindset from being the professional you to being the parent you and just spin the hats just by the click of the fingers. So I think it's really important that you are conscious and deliberate, that you're not reactive to what that high performance day looks like, that you are breaking it down, that you are committing it to black and white. And then you are testing against it and find out what's working and what isn't working. The fourth principle is about going to work every single day. And I think this is a physical switch that we need to press in our brains, that it's no good, for example, sat in the lounge with the kids who are on their iPads, watching TV, playing games, you there with your laptop trying to do quality work. You've physically got to go to work every single day. Now, I'm not saying you have to walk out your front door of your house and walk back in and say goodbye to the family and then come back in as if you are going into your office, even though you're working from home. But I do think you need to find a part of your house. It doesn't matter. I've been doing Zoom calls with people who are working in their bedrooms, that some people do have the luxury of having their home office at home. Wherever it is, you've got to find an area of your house that you designate to being your workspace, where you physically go to work every single day. And I think it's really important that you, in your mind, you physically transport yourself into that work environment, get really laser beam focused and locked in, and really focus on work and get switched into that environment that you're going into. So I think that's psychologically something that's really important to talk with our people about how they are physically, mind and body, translating and flicking that switch where they're going to work and into that designated space that they're creating in the home environment. And then the final piece is about discipline. Where focus goes, energy flows. It's so easy in the home environment to go to your desk and suddenly think, oh, I'll just go and make a coffee, or I'll just go and check on the children, or I'll just go and put a load of washing on. And suddenly, you haven't got the productivity or could burn through the workload that you need to get through. So when you do go to your work environment, it's about really locking in, focus, 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 and really being disciplined. And switch off your emails. You know, if you've got an important piece of work to do, hone in on it. Set yourself a time deadline and say, right, this proposal or this email I need to carve out, or this communication I need to design, or this presentation or this Zoom call with a client that I need to prep for, it's going to take me 30 minutes. And give yourself little time challenges where you really develop the disciplined discipline of disciplines where you're really honing in and burning through your workload. And all these things in this routines and rituals is about how you set yourself up to be that productivity ninja where you really are burning through your workload. So what's your one golden nugget, which is either a positive reinforcement of what you're already doing? Maybe it's I need to do more of that, or maybe there's an idea that I've talked about in here. Maybe it's about thinking about it as not a normal day, or maybe the concept of actually going to work and physically and emotionally pressing that switch in your mind. What's your one golden nugget that you're taking away from this principle to routines and rituals? Our third principle that we're going to be talking about is our over-communication plan. And notice the key word in there, communication, let alone in the current landscape and environment that we're operating in, where even more of our team are probably working in a remote environment. Generally within businesses, the lack or poor communication is the Achilles heel of most businesses. And I think this is a real quick win, an opportunity where we don't just think about what our communication plan is, we think about what our over-communication plan is. Crisp, sharp clarity of communication is so important in the current environment that we're operating within. And it's even more prevalent that we turn up our dials as leaders when we think about having people in the remote work environments. So we're going to talk about five key principles, simple practical ideas that I think form the framework of a really compelling, productive, proactive over-communication plan. There's a couple of guiding principles that just I think are worthy of calling out as we think about what our over-communication plan might look like. The first is this: most people do not listen with the intent to understand, they listen with the intent to reply. And that's why I think we've got to slow our communication down. We've got to be really clear about what the messages are that we want to land, that we're not trying to land too many big points at the same time, because people will hone in on the first thing that you say, and then they've tuned out for the next 5 minutes of conversation that you're talking about. So people do not always listen with the intent to understand, they listen with the intent to reply. We've got to really make sure that our people are not only hearing, but they're truly listening to the messages. And I'm going to share a technique with you which will help to combat that challenge. The second point is, how many times as leaders and managers are we frustrated that we think we've communicated something in well? We go to check back in a day, 2 days, 3 days later, and the task or the output is not delivered what your expectation was of where you wanted it to be. And I think we could jump into default mode and think about the inadequacies of the individual in that scenario. But if we took a moment and a step back, and I think it's always interesting in life that when you point a finger at somebody else, where are the other fingers pointing? So if people have not understood, perhaps the challenge lies in whether you communicated correctly in the first place. Let me say that again for you, because I think it's so important. If people have not understood, perhaps the challenge lies in whether you communicated correctly in the first place. Quality of communication is so important. So there's a couple of principles that we're going to talk about. Number one, in the remote environment where you're leading remote teams, what is your communication plan? And even if I break that down and make it even more practical, what is your weekly comms plan that you are creating? Does that start on a Monday morning with a team session where you get everybody together on Zoom or on Teams? And we'll talk about the importance of that from a well-being perspective when we get to principle five, well-being. But your weekly, kick the week off, start it well, what I call your weekly preview session, where you get everybody together, that even in a remote environment, you're still getting that feel of one team by bringing everybody together. That's the kickoff for the week, your weekly preview session. That you top and tail that with the end of the week with your Friday afternoon session, where all the team come together again on your platform, whichever you're using, and you do a end of week review session. I call this your weekly preview review session. They don't have to be long, but the importance in your over-communication plan is your frequency of contact and touch points in your communication plan. So you head your week, your start and your end of the week with your preview review sessions, the primacy, the immediacy. Then what else are you putting in there? When are you doing one-to-one check-ins with your team? What are they structured check-in sessions? Are you planning on doing actually a team session every single day? That Monday could be half an hour, Friday could be half an hour, but every day there is a 10-minute check-in where everybody's coming together. Whatever it looks like, my point is simply this. Make sure that you carve out that comms plan, that you have got that designed with conscious, deliberate intent, and you are executing and delivering against that comms plan, and all your team understand what that plan looks like and the benefits of it. The second point is that all our communication, and I've mentioned a couple of times about our communication being short, sharp, and crisp. And there's a great model I want to share with you related to the impact of our communication. And if people aren't, communication is the impact that it has. If people have not understood, have we communicated correctly in the first place? So the model is called the Y Triangle model. We've included this in your toolkit. So there's a template which captures all the key points that I'm going to talk about now onto one simple PDF document for you. So this is how the Y Triangle model works. There's three elements. The foundation is the why, the left-hand side, the what, and the right-hand side, the how. My first question for you is, and this Y Triangle model has got two applications, one from a motivation perspective, but secondly, in our over-communication plan about how we communicate effectively. So when we think about communication, and if I said to you, most organizations, where do they spend most of their time from a communication perspective? Which of those elements on that model? Is it the why, the what, or the how? And notice my question, where do they, not where should they, where do they? And certainly in my experience, the default is most organizations will spend their time in the what, then they'll move into the how. But actually, the foundation, the platform, the pillar of the whole process is all about the why. And there's a couple of examples that I think really drive and bring this to life. One is, if I think about over the last few years, particularly the last decade since 2008, with all the change programs that we've been involved with organizations, whenever a client is doing a change program, I always say to them, can you send me all your change documents? And we do a word search, and we search how many times do they reference the word why, how many times what, and how many times to how. And the ratio is always this. Three times what, two times how, one times in the why. And this is why I think that happens. Because as leaders, we've done our critical thinking behind our closed doors. We've done the upsides and downsides. We've done our SWOTs. We've done our analysis about what we need to do. And we've really created the why and the compelling reason. And by the time we come to communicate with our people, we're in execution mode. It's almost like the analogy that we've saddled our horse, we've gone into the arena, we've done five laps of the arena, and by the time we come to engage and communicate with our people, they're still in the stables. They didn't even realize they were supposed to be in the arena. They're still feeding the horse, they're still grooming it, they haven't even got the saddle on its back, and yet we've done five laps of the arena. So from a communication perspective, what's really important that we address and we make sure that we're taking our people with us by making sure that we are communicating the why, the what, and the how of our effective communication model. And why this is so important is when you think about how as human beings we make decisions. And if I said to you, what's the primary driver for our decision-making as human beings? Is it logic or is it emotion? What would be your answer? And certainly, my experience is that the default mode is our default mode is towards the emotion, and then the justification comes with the logic. And when you think about those three elements of the Y Triangle model, my question for you is, what's logic and what's emotion on that model? So if you put a line two-thirds of the way up the triangle, what's interesting is the what and the how is all about the logic. The why is all about the emotion. Here's my key distinction and point with the Y Triangle model. Most leaders, most businesses, most organizations are spending their time in the wrong part of the model. They're communicating in the logic, the what and the how. And what they haven't done is they haven't contextualized or they haven't set the framing for the communication by a compelling positioning of the why. And the why is the foundation, the platform, the pillars of the whole process. And the reason the line is two-thirds of the way at the triangle is conscious and deliberate, Because in effective communication, two-thirds of the time should be in the why, a third of the time in the what and the how. And if you get the why right, the what and the how will fall into place far easier. But as human beings, our innate ability, and if you think back to the five interlocking human drivers that I talked about, when we start to communicate, particularly changes that we're making, our natural human instinct is to go internally and to address the whiffen factor, what's in it for me, the why. And therefore, we can be talking about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, but if we haven't addressed the whiffen factor and we haven't contextualized or framed the why for our people, for our clients, for the business, for our long-term sustainability, for our long-term existence, then we will not land the what and the how effectively. So my challenge for all of us, particularly as we lead remotely, is that in all our communications moving forward, that in our planning and preparation, whether it's a verbal communication that we're going to do across Zoom or one of the video technology platforms, whether it's an email that you're going to send out, that you simply, as part of your planning and preparation, you ask yourself three questions. What's the why, the whiffen for all parties? And really break the why down from a team perspective, business, clients, organization, shareholders, suppliers, partners, whoever, all the different stakeholders that make up the why. And with that, thinking about the why, what's the what in terms of what we need to do and how are we going to do it? And by being conscious and deliberate of working your communications and running all planning of communications through those filters in terms of those three questions, you will elevate the quality, the crispness, the clarity of the communications that you are delivering, and you will deliver your message with impact. The third principle is about repetition. And I always remember attending a leadership conference for one of my clients. And what was really refreshing was that the CEO stood up at the annual leadership conference and said to the top 200 global leaders, the great news is a lot of the messages that I'm going to be talking about this year are the same as last year. And that's because our strategy is working. We're fundamentally on the right tracks. And therefore, why would I want to change my message? And repetition really is the master of skill. Going back to the point that we talked about earlier, people might be hearing, but are they really listening? And if you are landing an important message, particularly something that might impact them from a personal perspective, as soon as you land the first part of the why message, they will switch out from everything else that you are talking about. So they might be present in the room, they might be hearing, but they're not really listening because they're still internalizing the first part of your message. So repetition of communication, repetition of message is really important. Using the same words, consistent reinforcement of what we need to do, how we're going to do it, and why. I can't over emphasize this, and this is why it's called an over communication plan, particularly in the climate that we're in. Over communication of our messages and our communication is really important. The fourth key consideration of your over communication plan is your media tools. Be really cognizant of the different generations and what their preferred media tools are, and make sure that you are blending and mixing up your media tools. For me, I prefer looking in the whites of the eyes of people. So I will absolutely stay clear of email, of using the phone. I'd much rather jump on Zoom communication where I can engage with people, get the impact of their body language, and I can use all facets of the communication process to make sure that I'm engaged, truly connecting and landing my messages effectively. So really think about, when you think about your communications, what are the best media tools to be using? And particularly with remote working, set up the expectation, particularly centered around email, about how you are using email. You know, the extended day 9 till 5, but as leaders, and I have a very clear message with all my people that I will work morning, noon and night to do whatever we need to do to help clients navigate through the landscape that we're in and make sure that I'm protecting our employees and everybody that works in all our businesses. And that means that I might be sending emails late at night, but here's the deal. There's no expectation that I expect you to read or respond to an email that is either sent late at night or first thing in the morning. If it's important, I will phone you or I will send you a text, but not email. That is not the media through which I will do that. So I think it's really important that within your over communication plan, you do set up the rules of engagement for how each of your different media tools and channels of communication are going to work, so that there isn't you are managing expectations about the communication styling and the landing of messages. And the final point in your over communication plan is about how you check understanding. And there's a simple technique that I want to share with you. It's called the playback technique. And I'm guilty of this more than any other leader. And the number of conversations I have with leaders about this simple technique, and people will look at me and they go, Royston, I fall into that trap every single time. And the playback technique simply works like this. Let me frame and give you the context to it first. That how many times as leaders are we communicating at pace? That we are thinking about the next meeting that we've got to go to, that we're trying to land our message at speed quickly, that we're trying to communicate four or five really important key actions, but we're not delivering it in a smooth, concise way. And therefore, you're at the end of it, you go, let me just summarize for you what we've just talked about, because in there I've just landed four or five key messages. And then you reel off and you go, one, two, three, four, five. And then you look at the other person, you go, you've got that, haven't you? With embedded language. And they're looking at you going, yes, saying the word yes, but the body language is saying no. And then we get frustrated, because when we come to check in a day later, 2 days later, and we're seeing how they're getting on with a piece of work, and it's massively off-piste with where we wanted it to be, we then get frustrated with the situation, with that individual, that 2 days has now passed and they haven't done what you wanted it to do. And the reality is, it was never set up in the first place for success, because it wasn't communicated in effectively at the point of setting it up. And therefore, the playback technique is simply this, that actually, who should be doing the summary in order to check understanding? And it's not us as the leaders, it's the recipient of the communication, the actions or the messages. So just pausing and taking a step back and actually saying to the person, I know I've just communicated a lot in a short space of time there. In order to ensure that I've communicated effectively, do you just want to play back what your understanding is of what we've talked about and what the actions are that we or you need to do over the course of the next couple of days? So suddenly you've got now the opportunity through their playback to make sure that you have coached in, that you have communicated in effectively. So in your over communication plan, I can't stress enough, you know, going back to the point I made right at the start, communication is the Achilles heel of so many businesses, or the lack of the quality of communication. Let's make sure, particularly in this remote environment that we're in currently, we do not fall into the same trap in our businesses. That's principle three, your over communication plan. Principle four we're going to talk about is about productivity and results. And you know, I think this is a really important piece of the jigsaw in these five principles, that to be around to benefit from the rebound, we have to take care of the here and now. That even in that remote environment, we still, as a business and as organizations, still need to be driving productivity and driving results. There will be a segment of your people who really buy into this, who are your A players, who will just transition so smoothly from the office environment to the home environment. There will be another camp of people who will easily get dilution of focus, where they get distracted easily, that you will have to spend more time coaching in what their routines and rituals need to look like. They will need more of your time, effort to set them up for success. And there will naturally be the people who, guess what, might have been underperformers in the work environment, and that is only going to be exasperated in the home environment. So we still have to turn our dials up about how we manage, lead, productivity and results. So here's my five key principles that I think will really resonate with you in leading remotely, productivity and results. The first principle is, and you know, on the session I did last week with an in-house client, this webinar that I'm doing with you personalized for them, this first point about outputs, not results, was their utopia moment. And when you think about leading remotely, it's not the same as being in an office environment where one of your measures is, are people sat at the desk? And just because they're sat at the desk does not mean they are being productive. But you don't have that same visibility when people are in the remote environment. And the metaphor I use, the story I use to bring it to life is, if you saw a fisherman and you walked to the reservoir or the lake where they're fishing, and you asked him how the day had gone, how good had the fishing been today? He wouldn't say, oh, the fishing's been great today, I cast my rod 250 times. He would say, great day fishing today, I caught 10 fish. So the metrics and measure of success in leading remotely from a productivity and results perspective is we've really got to hone in on measure outputs, how many fish have been caught, not the inputs, how many times I cast the rod. It's output measurement in a lead remotely performance and environment. And I just think that is such an important distinction and switch that as leaders we need to press in our minds, that when we're setting our people up for success, when we're demonstrably defining what excellence looks like in the remote environment, that you are having a conversation about measuring their performance and about how you're going to focus on the outputs, not the inputs goals. Now, we've talked already about routines and rituals. It's not a 9 till 5 day. So being at their desk or being available 9 till 5 is not a success measure. What is that, whatever that timeline is, that they are delivering the outputs and the quality of work that we need as an organization and we need as businesses and we need as leaders. The second key principle of productivity and results is that the what and the how performance are equally important. We can't just default to the outputs and the what. How people deliver results, living by our values and our behaviors of the organization, are just as important in remote environments. In some ways, I would even say they're more important. So making sure your performance conversations are balanced around the what and the how of performance, that we are as leaders placing a 50-50 weighting on each of those factors. Now, it's no good delivering outputs if your behaviors are a train crash. It's no good being demonstrating the right behaviors and living our values if you're not delivering the outputs and the results. They carry an equal weighting from a productivity and results perspective in leading performance. So that's our second key principle. The third is about our quantitative and our qualitative measures. And I think when you're measuring the outputs, this is really important, that it's not just a quantitative measure, that as leaders, not only are we clear about what the outputs are, we're absolutely clear about the qualitative nature of those as well. So let me give you a really simple example. Somebody sends me a PowerPoint presentation for a client meeting that we've got at 4 o'clock this afternoon. The quantitative measure is I wanted the presentation by 10:30, and at 10:19 it lands in my inbox. The qualitative nature of it is, though, I go and check it and I've got to do 90 minutes of work on that presentation to get it ready for 4 o'clock. That isn't quality output delivery for me. So I think it's really important that we set up the expectation of what are the quantitative and the qualitative measures. And in that scenario of that presentation for 4 o'clock this afternoon, one of my challenges, I've always lived by the principle of, you know, tell me how near it is to being client ready. So is this presentation ready for me to deliver to the client straight away at 4 o'clock in your mind's eye? Is it 100% client ready? If it is, and I switch and I click into it and I've got to do 90 minutes of prep work, then there's going to be a conversation I'm having with you, because there's a misalignment in perception reality between our expectations about what qualitative looks like. So I think it's really important that you set up with your people and that delineation of, is it client ready? Is it 100%? You know, if it wasn't coming through me as the filter, would you be happy to send it to the client right now, is a really important delineation and quantification that we need to do when we think about productivity and results. The fourth key principle in our productivity and results, the leading remotely does not mean that we can turn down the dials on our candid feedback in terms of leading and managing performance. It's even more important, linked to the what and the how of performance, that we are having regular, frequent conversations, that there is candid feedback about inspirational feedback about what people are doing well, but also there's developmental feedback about what they can do to improve. You can't bank and hide behind the fact that you're not face to face with somebody that you talk about, well, I'll bank that for when we're back in the office environment. The reality is none of us know as we sit here today how long the extent of remote working is going to need to go on for. So therefore, we have to optimize our performance and our results by really maintaining, enhancing, and turning up the dials on our performance cultures that we create within our business. And that absolute pursuit, obsession, and relentless focus on candid feedback, both inspirational and developmental, and managing the balance between those two is so important in our principle four about productivity and results. And then the final principle about early heads up, there are no surprises. So when you are managing output, you are setting deadlines about when the expectation is of when a proposal is going to land in your inbox, when something is going to be complete by. If that is not going to happen, then it's about how we set the rules of engagement with our teams so that there's an early warning or heads up sign of saying, Royston, you wanted the proposal by 10:30. It's taking longer than I think. You're not going to have it till 11:30. But don't tell me that by me having to phone up at 10:45 or send an email to check where the presentation is. And I think that early no surprises and early heads up is such an important part of how we lead and performance lead purposefully when we think about this principle four of productivity and results. So which are the key metrics in there? If you think about those five principles, which is the one that's really resonated with you that we've just talked about in the last 10 minutes, which is the one that you're really going to be your key takeaway to really raise your conscious awareness of really driving from a leadership perspective. And then finally, our principle five, our well-being. The well-being of our people is so critical. They're our greatest asset that we have as businesses. And how do we really make sure that we are being empathic? One of the key principles, traits that we talked about within our leadership brands. And we have to find the balance and blend between productivity and results. And for us as leaders, doing it in the right way, by all costs, being genuinely interested in protecting the well-being of our employees. And the reality is that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And if we think back to the why triangle, it's about we're managing the logic in terms of the performance, but we are emotionally connected with our people because our people genuinely know that we care and are interested in their broader well-being, not just their well-being, but the well-being and the protection of their families, of the environments that we're currently operating within. There is nothing more important than health. So our ability to manage the yin and the yang of productivity and results with being empathic and managing the well-being is one of our greatest gifts, opportunities, and challenges as leaders. And it's the one thing I'd really urge us to reflect on in our leadership DNA and leadership brands about how effectively we are currently doing that. So when we think about our well-being, there's five key golden nuggets that I want to share with you. The first is simply this, that there are undoubted benefits of remote working from a work-life perspective. The ability to walk across the door threshold at 5 o'clock or whatever time you're finishing, and within four steps you are transitioning into your home life, I think will really make us reevaluate how we do business moving forward. There is no doubt about it. The number of clients I've spoken with over the last 2 weeks who are running virtual board meetings, running client meetings across technology and Zoom and Teams, that they're having just as much impact through the technology as they would do face-to-face. And I'm not saying that we won't go back to some face-to-face, but let's imagine if you were doing board meetings and you were doing one every month, 12 in a year, maybe you'll do quarterly face-to-face board meetings and the others two in between will be technology-based. So there's undoubted benefits, and I think it's really important from a well-being perspective that we help our employees and colleagues manage the work-life blend, not balance. Work-life balance doesn't exist. Balance implies that we've got them in kilter. And the reality is we're constantly managing the tensions and spinning the plates. So I think it's more effective and more relevant to talk about work-life blend, that we recognize that our people and ourselves are constantly spinning the plates, and how effective are we at managing those dynamics. So the first is about work-life blend. The downsides of remote working is it can create isolation and loneliness. You know, one of the number one key hierarchy of needs is that people really buy into from an organizational perspective is being part of a team, and not the loneliness and isolation that can come from remote working environments. So I think it's really important that we recognize that if people are particularly people persons and they like that face-to-face connection, the isolation and loneliness that can come from remote working is a real issue. Let's recognize it. Let's listen for the language that our people are talking. Let's have the proactive conversations so that we can manage it off with them. And then the third key idea here, let's make sure that we are combating the challenges that are created by isolation and loneliness by really thinking about how we create and keep that team feel. And when I talked about your comms plan, make sure that the socialization and the one team is still coming through so that you are doing your weekly team sessions through your video technology, your Monday and your Friday sessions. One of my clients, they actually still did their Friday drinks, and everybody on Friday afternoon, they came on, they still did what was their shot of the week and what was their miss of the week. Everybody bought their glass of wine or their gin and tonic or their beer, whatever their preference was. And they had a half an hour session at the end of the week. So there are things that you can do to combat the isolation and loneliness, but you've got to be conscious and deliberate about thinking how you do those things. The fourth key principle of your well-being strategy is about make sure that, like we talked about going to work every single day and having a workspace, that you go home every day. And it's the reverse of what I talked about earlier, that it's your switch that takes you out the work environment into the home environment. And the challenge with your days extending 9 to 5 is it can feel like you're working all the time. And therefore, you've got to be conscious and deliberate about thinking when you transition from your work environment to your home environment. Leave your phone or computer in the office or the area that you've designated as your workspace, and make sure that you are tuning out from work and you're tuning into your family life, and you are physically, metaphorically in your mind, you're pressing that switch. And then the final principle of well-being is about making sure that you are doing your check-ins, that your calls are not just purposeful around understanding how people are performing from a productivity and results perspective, that you are doing the unconditional contact where you are checking in with your teams as a group or individually and just putting the call in saying, how are you? How are you getting on? How are you finding working from home? Are you finding any challenges? Is there anything you want to talk to me about? And that you come across, people don't care what you know, how much you know, until they know that you care. And as empathic leaders, it's about that unconditional contact where we are genuinely interested in the well-being of our people. So there you have it. That's our Leading Remote framework, the 5-5 framework for leading remotely. 5 key principles, 5 ideas.